Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday, January 29th. January's finishing up here right around the corner. So glad that you're here. So glad you're joining me, whether you're on LinkedIn, on Facebook, or on YouTube watching this live or the replay. If you're watching this live, make sure to say hi, put something in the chat. Tell us that you're here, where you're from. If you're watching it live or if you're watching the replay, that'll pop up as well. If you have any questions, obviously put those in. Would love any interaction, any support. So today is going to be an interesting one. I am excited for this because Michael Foray is my guest, and he is in an interesting industry that has gone through a lot in the last year. He is in the lead generation space, and not just lead generation, but he's also in the lead generation conference space. So you can imagine lead generation and everything that's been happening in the world in the last almost 12 months. And then think about having a conference that you do that you just started doing last year was his first time. And then now he's going to do his second one and everything going on with the pandemic. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about lead generation, talk about all things that when it comes to lead performance marketing, whatnot. Help me welcome Michael Foray to the room, to the stage. Michael, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show live edition.
Thanks, Jason. You know, you just validated all my reasons for anxiety in that intro.
Oh, no.
That's why I'm feeling, just started the conference and now I'm doing it. Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy year, but it hasn't been that bad.
No. Well, and obviously, and I know you well enough to know because we've chatted before for podcasts and, you know, I'm familiar with the space that you're in. You know, I love that kind of performance marketing space, especially with networking. And so I know you well enough to know that there's lots of silver linings, always going to make the best of it. But it's very similar to people who I saw last year who switched jobs in like February and like started a new job in March and then, you know, didn't know what was coming. And it's like, oh, the timing. Sometimes the timing, but you know, it's one of those things. I know that when you get through this and you put your conference on in March that, you know, you make it through this, everything else is easier after that. Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe you'll relate and other people from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I think I was born with an innate gift to just look forward versus, back and not really think too much, but also just be a doer, you know, okay, today I got to knock this out. I got to do this. Here's what I have to do. Be smart about it, of course. But you know, kind of ignore some of the things that are happening peripherally around you sometimes, and just focusing on your main objective is something I think I was potentially just born with. So,
yeah. So you see yourself as a glass half full, or glasses like even more than half full, just generally.
More than half full, for sure. Yeah. For sure. I mean, and I also think we have so much control over every minute and second of our life. You know, I don't think there's anybody controlling what I do with my happiness, with my my work, my business, except me. You know, so I take full responsibility for that on a regular basis.
So obviously, I really want to dive into lead generation, marketing, performance marketing, sales, all that stuff. But yeah, since you brought this up, where do you think that comes from? Was there any point in your life where you weren't that way and then something happened? Or do you feel like you're just always kind of been that way, nurtured that way as a kid growing up?
I mean, I think it's a personality trait. I think it is. I don't think it can be learned, for sure. But I think, it may come easier for others to sometimes ignore the negative and focus on the positive. And I think maybe as a younger person, it was just more blissfully ignorant, right? You know, just kind of floating through life, focusing on the things that made me happy as a young person, right? Those things sort of evolve into business as you get older, family, all these other things that are more quote unquote responsible. And those same things are what make me happy. So, you know, focusing on those things is comes naturally to me. But, you know, I think you, you know, balance it and balance that with being smart about the negatives as well. So it's not blissful anymore, right? It's not or ignorant. It's not ignorant anymore. It's a little bit more intelligent blissfulness.
Well, and I love that because I think there's also that balance, too, where it is important to be blissfully ignorant. In no matter what, in sense, like not just like ignorant is like, oh, I just don't get it and I'm just going to do my thing or sit on the couch and just be happy. But like just ignorant to the negative things or the bad outcomes or like the anxiety, worst case scenario kind of spiral that, you know, most people get into that I'll get into if not careful. So I think that's good to just be like, I guess it could all go bad, but I'm not even thinking about that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think now, for example, you know, you talked about the conference and everything that we've been dealing with over the pandemic, and having an event company or, you know, in this day and time is absolutely ludicrous. But, you know, we've had to look at, you know, issues and go, okay, how do we make this? How do we work around this? Right. And then once we figure out what that plan is, move forward and be positive with it. And I think there are some, you know, things about putting positive energy out there, making it happen, manifesting your destiny, you know, all those sorts of things I think are true in life. So we look at the negative, we figure out how to overcome it and move forward on a different path. Maybe it's a different turn, left turn, right turn, but, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think it's about staying positive through these times and whatever business you're in. Navigating it accordingly and moving forward with a positive outlook.
And anybody that knows me knows that that's how I feel as well. And what I look at too, like I said earlier about you and the conference, is this time right now, which is historic and detrimental to a lot of people. When you make it through this, everybody, whatever you're going through, whatever struggle or challenge, like any other challenge in your life, when you make it through that and come out the other side, like the strength and the perseverance and everything that you'll have from that to like prove like, hey, I went through that tough time and I made it. You know, then it's like, you know, this guy C-Rock, who I had a conversation with recently for the podcast, like rocket fuel, right? It's just rocket fuel for your life, what you're doing, because then it's like, wait, if I made it through that, I can make it through anything.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in other analogies, we're like kind of coiling up, right? We're coiling up to just like let us out, you know, and you know, I think, you know, I saw an interview with somebody a couple weeks ago, and he was, I can't remember what sort of industry he was in, but he was talking about the resurgence of arts and music and getting together in events that's going to likely happen, because as humans, we need all that sort of stuff. That doesn't go away. This isn't the new quote unquote normal. All these sorts of things, it's going to explode at some point, and people are going to come out with so much more, you know, music or art or events and all these sorts of things that have been oppressed, you know, for the last year. So I'm excited for the future for sure.
Be awesome. Well, let's get into some marketing conversations now that we got the life part, which, you know, I love. That's what I even told you. I think you haven't put this in LinkedIn. We'll talk about marketing. We'll talk about sales and business. We'll talk about life, wherever it goes. You know, it's what happens on the show. But real quick, my main man, Nishant, said hey to both of us. Nishant has come on board to help me with marketing. So I know this is going to be a great conversation. I hope he gets a lot from this so he can help me with the performance marketing side. So make sure to share lots of great stuff, Michael. So that
I'll try my best.
He can help me. And then Jeff Lord, a new acquaintance and friend, said hello to us as well. So thanks, Jeff, for tuning in. And Nishant, so let's get into kind of one of the biggest things, and I generally just like to look at trends, talk about like what's going on with marketing in general. But obviously now 10, 11, 12 months into this thing, we can no longer say, well, you know, we just do marketing this way. It's like, how is it different? So what are you seeing from that space, right? From the lead generation world kind of umbrella, what's working well for companies? What they're doing marketing wise, you know, what the public wants.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot there, but I think I just to start off from the top, you know, the lead generation industry consists of, you know, companies across multiple industries like solar or mortgage, insurance, auto insurance, arguably could be one of the larger quote unquote lead gen vertical industries. All those industries, for the most part, maybe not solar as much because there's in-home installations, all this sort of stuff that slowed down pretty significantly in the beginning. I don't know where it is at now, but insurance and mortgage with low rates, these guys have been thriving. And subsequently, a lot of the lead gen industry has been thriving through this time. I mean, it's probably parallel to, you know, any online e-commerce type of company that's just been doing really, really well. So it's been great to see, you know, them continue to, you know, be successful through these turbulent times. There was a, you know, I think like most companies, there was a few months initially March, April, May, where companies just had no idea what was going to happen. They were moving sales forces from within their buildings to remote. from a technical standpoint, they were trying to figure things out. But once that sort of, you know, got resolved, you know, they were back to normal. Budgets were reenacted and increasing. So,
and I saw that too, that like dip that a lot of them did, put things on hold and then figured it out kind of, and went all in and went nuts. Is there any specific marketing, I want to say medium or strategy that you see is working well, or where major shifts have happened in the, let's say in the last year or so?
What I'll say is I don't think so from a pure marketing standpoint, right? I mean, I think the strategies, generally speaking, all sort of remain the same, right? The outlets, the paid search, the email, the display. I think we're getting more sophisticated with after the lead, like the nurturing of potential prospects, right? So from a front end standpoint, retargeting, behavioral targeting, all that sort of stuff, but also scoring, ensuring that they're sending leads to the right people, utilizing now different ways to continue to talk to those consumers. So one thing that's happening, I think, in lead gen, which is really, really awesome. So generally, you know, a lead gen company, any lead gen company is driving traffic to their form. They're capturing the data and then they're selling it to, you know, their partners. So a mortgage company or an insurance company. And then that's it. And then they're kind of done and they're just have this machine of just trying to drive traffic to their form and sell leads. What I've seen more and more now over the last couple of years, which I think is great, is that these lead gen companies are really becoming their own brand. They're caring about the consumer, not just from a, can you get through this form and how quickly and at what cost can I get you through this form to sell, but also they're following up. They're going, hey, you know, are other things that we can help you out? How did it go? You know, there's a more consultative approach that's, or hand holding approach now that you come to our website, we'll help you find a good option. And we won't just say goodbye after that. You know, we'll come back around. Did that work out? If it didn't work out, can we help you with, you know, other things? And I think that is good because it really starts to focus on the consumer versus just generating a lead.
Yeah. And instead of that classic, and I think most people have had the experience or been close to the experience, which is you see a banner ad or you get an email or something, maybe you click on it or not, but it just looks like generic one and done. Like I fill out this form, who knows what's going to happen. Or, you know, I go to this landing page, it sounds good, but I literally have no idea who the company is because it's just this generic landing page, right? I'm just going to enter into this funnel versus what you're talking about, which almost like one of the words that pops in my head is this concierge, like lead gen solution, which is, okay, I'm looking for solar for my house, right? And I end up on this landing page and fill out this form for this company who's going to help align me with somebody instead of like, hey, I'm going to sell you solar panels. It's like, I'm going to help you find the right person. And that collective warehouse concierge, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one company, for example, will, you know, generate a lead, but they'll also they'll keep the people on their website and do the matching sort of within their behind their lead sort of form wall, I guess you would say. And so they'll match people, and then they can come in and see if they got messages from that person or that company. And they sort of control a lot of even the communication process of it. I think that's just interesting. You know, Legion companies are taking, I think, more responsibility over the data that they're creating, which I think is good, and the consumer. So we'll see how it continues to evolve. Obviously, you know, the general mechanics of Legion, you know, haven't changed in 20 years. You know, it's the same thing. Driving traffic, try to get a high conversion rate on your page, sell the lead or the call or whatever it may be. But I think more and more so, the focus on the consumer is being made, and it's really, really important. I mean, everyone's getting burnt out, right, on going to find like a you know, a refinance and a mortgage, filling out that form, getting all these calls, and feeling like you just, you know, walked into, you know, something horrible with all these, you know, all this stuff happening. So, you know, consumers are getting burnt out. I think it does need to change. I think the focus on consumers is a really good thing.
Well, and if you've done that as a consumer and you've filled out one of those forms or a couple of those forms and then been barraged by the never ending amount of calls and emails because your data was then sold to a whole bunch of people, then you really don't want to do that again. Right.
Yeah.
And that happens. You're just like, next time I need a mortgage or insurance, that's the last thing I'm going to do, which.
Yeah.
Again, it's kind of it's interesting hearing you talk because I'd never thought about this, but like my goal with salespeople and sales teams to help them sell in a way that consumers actually look forward to dealing with a sales professional versus how we generally all feel when we think about, oh man, I got to go deal with a salesperson today. Like, yuck. And then thinking about this world you're talking about, which is, oh man, I need to find, let's say, a new insurance company. Yuck, this is going to suck. I got to fill out forms and then just get harassed for months until I pick one versus the evolution you're talking about, which is, okay, cool. I know I can go. Like right now, if I want to travel, I go on Expedia and I'm like, okay, this is great because I can go to one place. I can find what I need. And then, yes, they have fees, but they'll set me up. And then it's easy, right? One stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that also, you know, trickles down to the brands that are buying the leads, right? The mortgage companies and the insurance companies and how they're handling communicating with these customers is changing or evolving a little bit. You know, obviously with consumers not wanting to pick up the phone, you have to have a whole other strategy about getting a hold of somebody, right? I mean, I think consumers, you know, gosh, I wish I had some, if I could recall some data, but, you know, contact rate, you know, used to be around 40% of the leads, you know, 40, 45. And then I think it's gotten a little worse. But I don't remember what the numbers were, for, you know, just straight calling somebody and having them pick up the phone. I mean, I don't pick up the phone if I don't know who it is and I don't know who would, but you did fill out the consumer did fill out a form. So they are expecting a call. So they are going to generally pick up, but now with communication, text messaging is just the way people want to talk. I think these days it seems to be less committal for some reason, or less intrusive is probably the right word. So you have brands now sort of taking that into consideration, you know, getting obviously compliant TCPA compliant data so they can text somebody, but, putting a call in there, putting a text in there, making the content a little less, aggressive. Hey, when you're ready to talk, you know, I'll be around today at this time. Let's do this. Are you, you know, or vice versa. Are you around sometime today to talk via text and you can schedule, you know, it's just so much easier for someone to do that. And so it's good seeing, you know, brands take that sort of approach as well. Not being such a, well, hey, you know, get on the phone and try to a boiler room approach.
Yeah. Well, and I always just look at that and step back and look at historical trends, right? Which is, you know, I remember being younger and like anytime the phone rang, right? This is somewhat even before answering machines, right? And then answering machines came, but anytime the phone rang, you were excited because it meant somebody was calling. And then telemarketers start calling, right? And then you get caller ID and then you start screening the calls, right? And then now you think of robocalls and robodials and just all this shady stuff and spoofing, you know, area codes to make it look like it's your phone. I still have my Washington State cell phone number from 20 years ago, 21 years ago. And so I know if anyone calls me like from that area code, I know it's garbage because I don't know anyone in that area code.
Yeah.
That they're trying to trick me. And so you look at that and how much that's, let's say, semi-ruined people's desire to answer the phone. I think, I remember as a kid growing up, like somebody came to the door, you were excited because who was it? It was like a friend or a family member or neighbor. And then, you know, solicitors knocking all the time. You're just like, I don't want to answer the door anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because Norma here, you know, has talked about Subaru emailing
and
her.
And that's my mom, by the way. My fans watching.
Hey, mom.
Morning here.
Well, I was literally thinking of the same thing and I was going to bring that up. I did the, what's True Car. Do you know where they'll give you the lowest price, better than dealer? I don't know, whatever. But basically, it's lead gen. You get three dealers that will call you. You get matched with the lowest three prices, and they call you and they email you and all this sorts of stuff. And actually, the process was pretty good. But they did. They stopped calling after maybe four or five attempts, which is about right. If you're calling somebody beyond six attempts, you're really wasting your own time.
And you're creepy. Yeah,
exactly. There's the creep factor goes up. But the emails kind of continue to come. And I think they came for, you know, a good 8-9 months after I had already purchased a car. Now, whose problem is that? That's my problem. I didn't unsubscribe, right? So and they're doing a low cost, something that that it costs them nothing to do. Why not send an email, you know, occasionally to them? I kind of get it. I don't know what the right answer is there. But I think, you know, it should be thought about at least. Should I be sending somebody an email 8 months from now? Probably not. Maybe have the nurturing campaign a little bit more specific to the time, right? Hey, I know you filled this out 8 months ago, but, you know, right. Is it something maybe you're still looking into? Can we help you find another kind of car? Is there somebody else? You know, like, I don't know. But that's interesting your mom brought that up because I was thinking the same thing.
Well, and it's tough because the stats are there and the marketers and the email marketers will always say, like, you just never know and nurture and it takes this many attempts and who knows when somebody might be in the right market. And of course, you can always point to a customer that does get an email for 8 months and then finally decides to move forward. And of course, that justifies and makes it all worth it. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing as consumers, you get in one of those, just subscribe. Like I have found that's the biggest thing that helps is just unsubscribe. And with so many laws in place, they have to unsubscribe you or you just, you know, report it. And that's really bad for marketers. So don't hesitate. I think it's just fun. And I was going to pop this up as well. You know, my mom tunes in for these live.
Well, I'm disappointed I didn't ask my mom to join. She would have loved this too.
It's still time. If you want to, if we can take a station break real quick, you can send her a text.
Yeah, right. Just send her it now.
But you know, it's interesting. And the reason I love this as well is most people who know me have either read the book or heard me talk enough. You know, a lot of the stories I talk about with how I feel about sales come from being a kid growing up, especially sitting in car dealerships, watching my parents battle car dealers for hours and hours, usually on a Sunday afternoon. And then it's interesting because my mom recently bought a Subaru and had a great experience and something that was, you know, way different and, you know, after some other ones. So it's interesting, you know, the evolution in some areas. But then the other side is kind of your experience with True Car and a friend of mine who basically did one of those Carvana vending machines, ordered it online. It showed up on a flatbed and
no way. That's awesome.
House and never dealt with a salesperson. And that's, to me, that's a sign of convenience and then a bad sign of how bad the process is that nobody wants to deal with the marketing, the sales. Like that's a bad indicator in my opinion. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be nervous if I was a car salesman, but, you know, with all these different types of processes that are making it so much easier to not sort of have this touchless, process to buying, you know, a significant item. And same goes for houses. I mean, I know we're getting off track here, but, you know, you can go out and find a house and schedule a walk. You don't need a real estate agent necessarily do all the front end stuff. Now, I think there are sites out there that help you do the back end as well. But, you know, are those, that's for a fraction of the people that are those do it themselves type of people. And most people want the service, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how that continues to evolve.
And I think what's exciting is that for people who are in car sales or real estate or any of those things, insurance, to me, it's on the flip side of that, it's super easy to set yourself apart when you do sales in a different way than what people are worried about or thinking is going to happen at that car dealership, right? Like I take my parents, for example, when they go and buy a car and they have a great experience with someone who cares and takes care of them and takes time and helps them buy the right car, not just the one that's going to make the biggest commission. That is so mind blowing because it's so different that it leaves an impression. So yeah. To me, it's really actually not that hard to be successful in sales. You just got to basically just do the opposite of what you think it takes.
Right? Well, that's why that's why I love your book too, right? Which I had it even placed. I had it placed right over here, but the screen is.
Oh, and you can't see it.
No, I put it over
here. Here we go. I'll put you in that. Oh, it's.
Yeah,
it's
no, where the heck is it? Wait. I don't even know how to do this. There it is.
There it is. Ah, oh, right there we go.
Okay.
I love it. if you're listening to the replay, Michael's the playing with the camera to making the white.
Yeah.
Awesome.
but authenticity, I mean, is the key to gosh, so many things in life, right? But sales and, being authentic with the messaging, what you're doing, even on the front end and generating traffic and leads. I mean, people read through read through the BS, right? People spot that stuff so clearly these days, even on commercials or whatever, or you're watching people and you're just like, God, that guy feels like he's full of shit, you know, or, you know, whatever. It's not authentic. And so when you're, I think the authentic sales, you know, persuasion and persuasion has such a dirty connotation, but it's not, you know, we're doing this all the time. I'm persuading you right now, making you think that I know what I'm talking about. No clue. Is it working? I'm being authentic
it's
too.
It's working. No, it's okay. Great. I'm fully on board.
But I'm, you know, at the end of the day, this is what we do, walk through life. It's relatively, you know, about some level of persuasion, I would say, and it sounds bad, but, we're all trying to, make these micro decisions to get other people to make these decisions on a regular basis to do things, whether it's my kids to get them to clean the room or whatever it is. I'm going to have to persuade him that this is going to be a good idea. Maybe that's with punishment or not. I don't know. But the sales part of it, I think it's just so important when you get on a phone with somebody and you're writing a script, a sales script or whatever it may be, is to be authentic about it. And that's more comes through the tone of a voice, potentially than the words. But, you know, having a very authentic approach to marketing and sales, I think is key. So that's why I loved your book so much.
Well, and I don't know what happened with my webcam. That's the fun part of live.
Yeah, going live. I'm that's okay. Everyone could just stare at my ugly mug.
We could just stare at you. But I think that's, I mean, so the question I have is what do you see? Because you've been, you know, obviously you're going into your like second conference with Lead Generation World, which you started, but you've been in this industry for a long time. Where do you see that actually happening? I mean, it's nice to think about it. It's nice to say, sure, you know, marketers are being more authentic. Consumers want more authenticity. It's nice to say that, but what is actually happening and or where are you seeing that actually occur?
Yeah, I mean, from a marketing side, I think it goes back to that sort of initial example of this lead gen company that really truly tries to curate the content and the messaging for specific individuals and holds their hand through the process. I find that to be loosely more authentic than, you know, someone just, you know, going to a forum. And I think the messaging that they provide on the front end too is just comes off less salesy, you know, and demanding. And I don't have a specific, page in front of me to reference. I should have had something up, but, and I think from a sales point of view, I think more and more people are just kind of understanding that authenticity gets them far much further than, what is it going to take to get you in this car today kind of scenario, right? So text messaging, saying, you know, being a little bit more casual and real with somebody. I know you're busy. So let me know when you're free and we can schedule a call, you know, something, you know, and just being conversational, I think is what salespeople are doing more so now than going, what can I do to get you in this car today? We've got the, you know, all this sorts of stuff. But it's hard to be specific with that answer. But I just generally think, companies and people and are being slightly more authentic with their messaging, or at least attempting to.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear, and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. Well, and I think, because what I see is, it's going back to what you were talking about with the lead generators, the marketers who are basically more owning the process, owning the relationship, and then being that person more than just, like, you know, setting them up and then dumping them off, is they're also, I think what I see anyway, is a lot of people realizing that the satisfaction and the completion of the whole process is as important as just their piece of the machine, right? So it's not just about, hey, I'm going to generate 1,000 leads and sell them off and good luck. The problem with that is, I sell you 1,000 leads, they're garbage, or the people didn't really care, or you promised something that once the salesperson gets on the phone and talks to them about doesn't actually exist or isn't the same, you're going to fire me and you're never going to buy leads from me again. You know, I'm going to run out of people to convince my leads are great.
Yeah. I think a real challenge in performance marketing is, one, what we're really trying to do is drive content to a conversion page and do it at a very specific cost. And there's a lot of things that affect what that cost per act, or that, you know, cost per lead or cost per click or cost per action is. And we're always tweaking them. So whether it's way up the funnel on bid prices, on click prices, or it's the content within that text ad, or that display ad, or it's the colors we use, or it's, you know, these sorts of things. And we need, at the top of the funnel, we need to drive people to action, which is click on this ad. So how do we be authentic with up that far up the funnel gets a little bit difficult, right? Because we're really trying to get one core action, which is make a click. But then when they get to the page, we're doing the same thing. We're trying to convert that, whatever that initial cost was of that click, or that down to now a lead. And how do we get that person to convert from a click to a lead and fill out this form and still be balance performance driven content, right? Like, here's what you're going to get, and you're going to get this, and you're going to get the free iPod, I don't know, whatever it is. And just click here today and you'll get a quote or whatever it is. How do you tailor that content so that you are being sort of authentic? And by authentic, I mean, you're being open and transparent with what's going to happen and what they're going to get. And, but by all the means, not writing a freaking paragraph on there, so that's not going to convert, you know? Right. I think that gets difficult, to ensure you're doing all those things and at the same time performing, you know? And that's where there's sometimes, you know, people get caught in the trap in lead gen and in performance marketing, where they're only focused on, you know, the lowest cost per click, the lowest conversion rate, all this sorts of stuff. But at the end of the day, it doesn't back out to the lowest cost per sale for the brand, right? It, sometimes it becomes even more expensive because there's low intent. Those people maybe didn't even know what they were filling out. They didn't know what to expect, all this sorts of stuff. So I that's why I said earlier, I think it's really great and positive to see companies sort of taking more of an approach of being transparent versus just worrying about that cost, because I think they know now that they, if they generate a higher quality lead, maybe somebody that actually knows what's going to happen, that lead's likely going to close more and their clients are going to stay around more. And by golly, they may even pay you more for that lead, you know, and it'll work out and you'll have a long sustaining business versus, you know, something that, you know, fly by night, someone's stopping, starting, pausing leads all the time because your leads aren't good, you know? So I think it's great that that sort of is coming around, but yeah, I think it's difficult. How do you sort of manage that balance of effectiveness and being transparent or authentic with the process? It's tough.
Yeah. And what I'll say from my experience on the buying side, so I've never been on the lead generation, the performance marketing. I've always been on the buying side of somebody providing that and buying those, is the shift. And this is where I try to help a lot of my clients with, and just others I talk to understand that the tendency, like you said, is to just look at the cost per lead, right? And say, okay, I'm buying this lead for $5, $1, $10, right? Or this data for 10 cents. And so, you know, that's a great deal. And I just got to convert so many. But if the quality is low, the intent is low, then it's going to take you even more, right? If you buy $5 leads and it takes you 100 of them to close, now we're talking the other metric to me, which is actually more important, which is cost per acquisition, which means it costs you $500 in marketing. The other thing, and this is the side people don't, you know, can't quantify, which is if I give 100 leads to my salesperson and they close one out of 100 of those, morale is usually really rough. They're unhappy. It feels like a grind. Also, you know, that's 99 people who are now unhappy and didn't want to buy, could potentially leave negative reviews about you and your brand because they're not thinking about the lead gen company. They're thinking about you, the solar company or the call center. And that's painful. I mean, I would rather pay $100 a lead, right? And have, you know, be able to convert one in three than, you know, buy $5 leads that who knows what you're going to get.
100%. And you're absolutely right. People don't take in those things. But until the sales guys come to you and start complaining that these leads are horrible. And what's funny is that mental perception aspect from a sales point of view, especially when we're talking about leads or people doing outbound calls. We, I mean, there were times where when we were buying leads, I was at a mortgage company where we bought hundreds of leads a day, 400 or 500 leads a day for about 120 loan officers. And a loan officer would come up to me and go, you know, Mike, these leads suck. I don't know. These leads, I don't know where you're getting them from, but they're bad. And I go, okay, let me look into it. And so the first thing I would do is see what the performance is of that lead just across the board. And I would find sometimes they just sucked for him. And so they were doing really, really well, but they sucked for him. And why is that? It's not, it could be his thing. He's doing fine. He wasn't a bad sales guy, but mentally he saw that he probably had a bad experience with that one name of that lead. And now, or maybe two. And now every time he looks at it, he just already knows. He's like, I'm going to have a bad experience with this call. Probably his voice tone changes. Probably everything sort of changes because his expectation is that this lead is bad.
Yep.
So I would, you know, so what we would do, we would switch the names of leads. We would start doing things.
I already knew what you were going
to
say.
Yeah.
Yep.
And by golly, it worked because people didn't know what the heck they were calling on. Their expectation was virtually all the same for every time they got a lead. Now, I know that's a little bit off of your point of about, you know, costs and volume and all that sort of stuff, but it's on the perception side of it. How they looked at a lead. If someone's sitting there dialing a bunch and they're having bad experiences, they're going to have that. And it's going to be a downward spiral, frankly. Either the person's going to quit at some point or they're just going to do a really bad job, you know, because they're so unhappy with what they're doing.
And on the way towards those negative outcomes is a lot of financial carnage in both the expense of buying those leads, paying for that marketing, right? The actual hard cost. And then there's the missed opportunities, right? Think about that salesperson you had. You give them 100 leads for, let's say, a week or a month, whatever that would look like. How many of those, if you had given those 100 leads to somebody else, could have closed those? And how much what's the opportunity lost in those deals, right? It's not just the 100 leads at $20 a piece, right? So the $2,000 they cost you, but what did you miss out on? And I come from a background where I spent years managing campaigns, which were direct mail. And every time the phone rang, it was $55. And so, you know, if you screw up 20 calls in a day, that was $1,000 plus the opportunity cost. And, you know, that's where people don't realize, like, you know, you want high quality leads. You also have to know what you're doing, which is,
yeah,
you know, getting in, how do sales teams win with them?
So let me ask you a question. Sometimes when you think of, or at least sometimes I frame authentic sales, I sometimes start to become passive in the process. How do you balance being like passive, going, hey, yeah, Jason, just give me a call. Or, you know, I don't know, falling into that versus something yep. that, hey, this is not, I want to be authentic with you. We need to close this sale today. No, but like, yeah. how do you balance that performance being authentic and not getting too passive with the process?
Well, I love that question. And this is so fun that you asked me a question on the show here. So this is, you know, we get to chat. You know, for me, that's why the biggest thing with the book is the subtitle Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker, because a lot of people end up in that passive mode that you're talking about if they're not careful, especially if they're leaning a lot on the authenticity. That's where the persuasion part of the formula comes in, which is, you know, order takers like, I really care. I want to build rapport. I want to do the right thing for you. They're generally, you know, that order taker side, that passive side. Generally what happens is before they get into a sales role that they probably weren't planning on getting into in the first place, they had bad experiences, like we were talking about, with salespeople that pushed them and manipulated them and did things that
they're just trying not to be that.
And they're just doing, they went to the other extreme, which is, I want to make sure nobody ever feels that way. I'll never treat someone like that. I'm never going to push somebody. And so they go to the order taker extreme.
Yeah.
And then in the middle is the key, right? The authentic persuasion key is, I care about you. I want to help you. If I see that it's a good fit, right? If you have problem X and I have solution X, then I, as a professional, actually owe it to you to help you. And that's where the persuasion, that's where the push is going to come from, which is like, if we're talking about mortgages, like, hey, you need a refinance. I can help you. This makes a lot of sense. You're going to recover the cost of this refinance in, you know, 13 months and you're staying in this house for the rest of your life. The next step is we've got to move forward with this. Like the next step is the application. What's your social security number? Like it's literally like, I know I can help you.
Yeah.
And if I let you walk away, I've actually let you down.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's sort of the key is, you know, authenticity doesn't mean you're not asking for the sale,
no.
You know, or walking through that process.
Yeah. And that's where the persuasion piece comes in, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm the authenticity is I'm doing it. I know what my reasons are. I know why I want to be in sales, why I want to be successful, who I am, what my strengths are, that self-awareness piece. And then the persuasion is like the actual intentional sales process, which is if you have this issue I can solve or this goal I can help you achieve, then I'm going to help you get there. And here's what I tell a lot of people too. It's both your duty and responsibility to help that person. If you don't, you've actually failed them if they walk away. The other place where my persuasion and let's say that I wouldn't say aggressiveness, but that like, I want to help you for you, not for me, also comes into play, which is, let's say mortgage example, or even car sales. If I was selling cars, if I know I can help you and I know what kind of car you want, cause you've told me, cause I've asked lots of questions and I have it and I can help you and I can get you something and you can afford it and it's a great deal. If I don't persuade you and I am too passive, you walk off that lot, you're going to go down the street and I'm afraid of what's going to happen to you down the street when you deal with the next person who's not me and may not care about you like I do. That's what I think about. I don't think just even myself and them. I think of, oh my gosh, what happens mortgage wise? What happens if you call the next person? What are they going to do?
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good. And while you're saying all that stuff, I'm trying to think, how can I going back to that question earlier about how do you become authentically persuasive in writing or like in short form on a page or whatever it is. And I don't know if there's a necessary answer there, but just starting to think about some of the words you're using and how that could be translated to a page, you know, about relating to somebody and saying, we really want to help you find this and we can, whatever it is, and putting it on there and here's how to do it. Let's get started by talking, you know, talking to one of our representatives, fill out this form. But I think if you can figure that out and test it and see if it works, it'd be really, really interesting and powerful to figure out how to be more empathetic potentially, you know, with the content on a page versus, you know, just save if, you know, you can save on your interest rate if you fill out this form, you know, kind of thing.
Right. And I think the big key is, especially when I'm, you know, if we're translating what I do in conversations and help people with, and you put that in writing, which is not my strong suit. That's why I'm super excited for the people
tough,
who help me on my marketing and the copywriting and all of that stuff. Like Nishant, who I mentioned earlier, and John Welch and his team that are helping me with my websites. You know, I think one of the things is knowing who your customer is, who you can help and how you help them. What I found is most fascinating to me is how many people are in sales. And I, you know, put them based on their stats and their efforts in the order taker category. Again, they mean well, they build great rapport, they build great relationships, and then they sit back and hope that the other person likes what they're offering and they make the first move, right? The thing is that what I see missing a lot is that salesperson and or that business doesn't truly understand the value to the other person. Sure. Okay. You might save money, but like, what does it actually mean to them? And what's the worst case scenario if they don't take action, which is what I look at, right? Like, okay, mortgages, refinance, get a lower rate, keep your payment down. You know, when times get tough, a lower payment could be the difference between keeping your home and not keeping it. Not to go after fear, but it's like, how am I really helping you? What's the real value?
Yeah.
I see a lot of people in sales that aren't thinking like walking a mile in their customer's shoes as a salesperson going, oh yeah. Like if I don't help them, who knows, you know, what could happen. And then if you can translate that onto the landing page or the copy of the text so that when the potential customer's reading it, they go, okay, yeah, that's me. I identify with it. And as a brand, drawing that line in the sand where it's like, here's the people we help. And then we're not trying to chase everybody else and be, you know, service to everybody. Here's our people. And when they read this and it resonates, then it's a great start.
Do you think that you can take some of that approach from a sales standpoint? Like, you know, there are things that you can think of the consumer going through or the person, the prospect that you're talking to, that the struggles that they have, and translate to the marketing side. I know you just said you struggle with, you know, maybe the content part of it. But the reason why I think about it is because I have a real world case study right here. Obviously, we have a conference coming up. We're in a pandemic, which having a conference in a pandemic sounds crazy to about half the country. I don't disagree. But we're going to do it in a real responsible and safe way. And we've got, you know, masks and all this kind of stuff. And we're going to be really good to go for low risk adults that want to attend and connect and meet face to face and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, I'm going to likely send out an email today, to our audience. And, you know, we send out an email once, every other week or once a week kind of thing. Part of it has been trying to be authentic with the situation, as well as getting them to register today and not wait till the last minute. Like most people will normally do. So having that conversation with somebody, you know, over the phone is sort of easy to do. I have conversations with people all the time and we talk about this and they hear the tone of my voice and they hear
Sure. Everything's
going to be okay. And they, you should be there and it's going to be great. We're going to be safe and it's going to be, you know, nice. And we've got social distancing going on and, you know, it's going to be wonderful. They hear all that and they hear all the great things. Putting that into an email gets hard to do that. And I think that's probably where you struggle and you're looking for assistance. But I'm wondering if the process is talking through it and then writing down what are those things that we're looking to you know, be empathetic about and put that into the email in a way, which is the real hard part, in a short, you know, sentence or two, you know. Anyway, so I'm just sort of thinking out loud because I want to be authentic too in the content as well and obviously be persuasive too.
Yeah. So what comes to my mind is I'm thinking, you know, there's obviously the safety side, there's the concerns, there's all of that part, right? Which I know you have covered. You're going to cover in there. People at this point right now, the pandemic isn't new, right? It's not like you're doing this in April of last year. Like we're talking March of this year. which means of course it's going to be safe. Of course, even if it's happening in Florida, you and I are both in California. So we play, you know, California is under different rules. Like we're still locked down like forever up here in Northern California. You know, Florida is obviously playing by different rules and open up, and it seems to be working. But everybody's just assuming it's going to be safe, assuming it's going to be smart, you're going to be responsible. For me, the thing that jumps out is over this last, let's say, 10 months, I have sat through, registered, attended or not attended many virtual
conferences.
Yeah. Some that I've paid for that I regret, that was a complete waste the way it was run. Some that I didn't pay for that were amazing given that it was virtual. And what it was all missing, and the key, is the networking, the connecting. I go to conferences for the networks, the relationships, for the expo hall, for meeting people I wouldn't necessarily have met online because they're going there. The sessions, the education doesn't always apply to me. It's the other stuff, you know, depending on what it is. And so for me, that would be the message that would get to me, right? Is that authentic message that's speaking to me, right? And it's true.
I'm writing this down, by the way.
I know. I see that. Anyone want, it is, you know, is that, hey, are you ready to get back and meet people in person, right? Like you and I talked about right before we went live on this. I'm super excited, not just because, you know, you are having me as a presenter and I'm going to be running a session on the buyer side, which is going to be super fun. It'll be the first time I'm speaking at a conference. So I cannot wait.
Don't screw it up.
I won't. I, you know, and it, this is one of those things where, you know, it was supposed to happen before, then it got moved, and then it got moved again. And it's one of those things where it might seem nice to have more time to think about what you're going to do, but it's not, you know, you're just
The
difference between going first in class and going last in class on a presentation. So anyway, you know, for me, just, I think the people who actually go, who get out of their seat and go, kind of like you're talking, that spring that's going to release, those people are the ones who want the most relationships. They want to meet other people. They're excited. Like you want to talk about early adopters and forward movers and people who want to innovate. That's who's going to show up at a conference when it happens, even if it's 200 people, 500 people, 50 people. And so that's the message, which is like, it's going to be quality.
That's a really good point too. I mean, cause you know, they're not looky-loos, right? They're not, you know, we're looking through the window, and just they're if they're coming, they're coming, and they're going to, you know, do some business. And that's how our show was last year too. I mean, we have, I think, not to sidestep this, cause I think it's a good topic. I'm curious how to translate it into it. But, you know, last year we believe there's a certain size conference that just gets too big, where you can't have quality conversations in passing. And some of those are some of the best, you know, conversations that you have when you're like, you come around, you're standing, maybe having a drink, and you meet somebody and you start talking, you go, oh, you do this. Oh, you do. And you create a relationship with that person. Not being like filed back and forth through, you know, doing the things with thousands of people, and you're bumping into people, all this sort of stuff. I think there is a certain size to a conference that's optimal for getting business done. I think it's around 1,000 people. Anything more than that gets, I think, just too much. But anyway, that's really good. I think that's something we all struggle with, is trying to be, you know, find those things, be empathetic to whatever the prospect is searching for and their situation, and trying to solve that and putting that into words, the fewest amount of words possible, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a great lesson, obviously, for anyone on here. For me, I'm thinking mentally, like with my message and what I do, especially because I can write. So I'll, you know, you're talking short message,
right?
Man, if I could keep it under 3,000 words in my email, then that's great. Anybody who's on my email list knows, like, I have good intentions, 50 words. Next thing you know, it's off the hook. But either way, like, I'm just thinking about your situation and conversations I've had with other people, which is like that whole randomness, right? This is what to put in that message, is understanding from your customer's perspective. Because one of the things I love about conferences, and I've talked to a bunch of people who are excited about your conference and going, because it'd be the first chance, which is when I'm in a session and I'm sitting next to someone because I just sat down, and then you talk to that person And then you exchange business cards or information. And then that turns into something and you see them later and then you talk to them. Like, you don't get that with a virtual conference. You're not on a Zoom call sitting next to somebody and being like, hey, let's chat before and after this thing is over. You're just like multitasking in and out. And if you can identify that in the email, in your marketing from the customer's perspective, like, hey, do you miss random encounters and meeting someone that you're sitting next to in a session or at a happy hour? Like, let's go. This is it. And for anyone else listening, it's like, what does your customer crave? What are they missing? What do they want? What's that impact? When I used to be in the mortgage business, everyone used to tell me, like, nobody buys homes in December, right? It's the holidays. Everyone shuts down. You can't do anything in December. And I was like, that's dumb. Why not? Like, of course. So then I started having conversations with people in like October, November, and they'd be like, I don't know. We're going to wait till the new year. Like, we're really busy. And I was like, hey, do this. Close your eyes. Visualize Christmas morning. You come downstairs in your new house, Christmas tree, all the presents. You and your family are opening up presents Christmas morning in your own house. How would that feel? That'd feel great. Okay, sounds good. Like, let's do this, right? Like, that would be amazing. So,
well, you know, the other thing too, the first thing I thought of when you said that was less competition, right? I'm thinking now these real estate guys are taking vacation in December and like there's more people out there looking to get. And that applies to lead gen too and sales. So when we were doing these mortgage things, we'd have, you know, guys there Monday through Friday. Some guys would show up on Saturday. We'd buy leads 7 days a week. And just because we needed volume. And we found after doing research that the best converting leads were Saturday and Sunday. And actually, Monday was probably the worst. You know, I said we should probably not buy lead. We shouldn't even come in on Monday unless we're doing processing. But our sales guys should probably just take Monday off. Come in Tuesday, work Saturday. And if they want to work Sunday, great too. But Saturday and Sunday works because most people aren't open, right? And then our prospects are sitting at home, but ready to take a phone call. They're doing chores or whatever it is. They could talk to somebody potentially and have a higher, you know, contact rate. So, that's, you know, when you were saying that, I was thinking, oh man, it's the same thing, you know, finding those little niches of where, what leads are all, you know, performing and when they're performing and stopping, you know, buying or doing, you know, driving traffic on the times that aren't performing is imperative to optimization as well.
And all of that goes into the empathy side of understanding your prospective customer, understanding what makes sense. And yes, there's points at which you would just drive more traffic or buy more leads and just get it done anyway and play a numbers game. But yeah, I mean, I've always done the same thing when I'm running teams and we're doing lead gen. Let's say even it's like direct mail where you can't control when people call, right? I'm not running an ad or turning it off or buying leads. Not buying leads, but those calls that would come in on a Saturday or a Sunday or on a holiday, right? It's President's Day. Most people aren't working. The people who are on a Saturday taking time to call in to get help for something instead of having fun, instead of doing anything else on the planet with their time off, are really thinking about it and really wanting, you know, help with that thing. And so the intent is really high. So the volume might be low, but the conversion is usually off the charts because you're meeting them, which is what this goes into. You're meeting them where they want to be at and what's, you know, when it's important to them.
Yeah, it was a significant difference too. I can't remember the exact numbers, but in a cost per loan, you know, closed loan, it was a few hundred dollars. And so when you're talking about, you know, a $600 cost per loan on Monday and then the leads you get on Saturday are $400, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, maybe $1 million for an operation this size that can convert more on Saturdays than on Mondays. It's a big difference. And just looking at those little things is really important. And that's, you know, I think brands and sales teams are starting to, you know, look closer at those stuff, right? I mean, sales and you know, that marriage between sales and marketing, I think, has always been you know, questioned. It's obviously one of the biggest topics, one of the large topics, you know, over the years is how do you get marketing and sales to talk to each other and be friends? Yeah. I think it's coming to, I think that's sort of coming together, you know, sales sort of wants to always blame marketing for stuff and marketing wants to blame that they're bad salespeople. But at the end of the day, when you break it down to numbers and work together, you can be really successful and be smart about what you're doing and what you're saying and what marketing's saying and being all on one page, you know?
And to me, though, it takes that leadership above it, right? Your example is a perfect one that just jumps to mind, which is the guy on your mortgage team who just couldn't close and disliked this one source of leads, right?
Yeah.
The challenge is there's a lot of sales leaders who look at the stats and hear those complaints. Oh. And depending on where they are on the chain, either a team lead or a sales manager, sometimes director of sales, is their ex-salespeople who have moved their way up. Their brain, if they had to decide 51-49 sales team versus company, they're always like, not always, but they're pretty much always going to bias and be an advocate for the sales reps, not an advocate for the company or the business or the financials. And so then what happens is they're going to pick up the case from that complaining salesperson and say, yeah, the leads are bad because Joe can't close them. So it must be marketing's
fault. Yeah. Well, and it gets personal. It gets personal. You know, people get upset and they don't like Joe or whatever it is for whatever reason. And, and they just think everything is coming from outside is going to be wrong. You know, it's the same. It's the same thing we deal with on a regular basis, you know, is this, you know, these perceptions, these preconceived perceptions or not even preconceived, just based on certain actions. Maybe it's that one bad lead. Maybe it's that one bad interaction at the, you know, in the kitchen or whatever. And that just builds into this animosity goes, and then they just, you know, it becomes a big problem in organizations, you know, from a personal aspect.
Well, and if anyone's curious about what to do about that, please join us in Florida for Lead Generation World, because I'll be talking about that, especially from the buyer side. So, Michael, when is the conference? Where can they find out more information for people watching this live or watching the replay?
Yeah, they can go to leadgenerationworld.com, and I'm actually going to flip over here for a second because I didn't even think about it, but I've got a discount code that if anybody's listening, and this is a code that will give $200 off, which I don't even think is out there right now. I think there's a $100 gift code out there, but not a $200. But you can go to leadgenerationworld.com, click on the top of the Orlando show, and you can see the agenda and all that sort of stuff. But if any of your listeners want to attend, I do have a code here. It is LGW. So think of Lead Generation World, LGW21. And then the letter C as in cat. So LGW21C will give you $200 off. So right now it's $695, so you can get it for $495, which is a screaming deal for a in-person conference. And the price I think goes up February 10th. So to get the best deal, I would do it soon. Authentic with that? Did I persuade anybody?
That was great. I mean, you know, got Ryan Butler, buddy in that area, he said, awesome. I expect him to be there for sure. I'm sure that
it's going to be good. It's going to be a good show. We got some great content and all that kind of stuff. And it is going to be just good to meet, like get back in a room with people, you know, even if it's with a mask on or whatever, just to connect, you know. I'm really excited for it.
For sure. And then I know that you're on LinkedIn. I put that information anywhere else that you're putting out content, way people can reach out to you if they have questions about lead generation, the conference in general.
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is great. They can email me, mike@leadgenerationworld.com works great. But LinkedIn has been a tool that I just, you know, I tend to communicate all the business stuff. I have messages and all that kind of stuff. I'm on there all the time. So that's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Awesome. I love it. Michael, thanks for joining me talking about life, marketing, sales, your email campaigns, my mom's buying a car experience. So fun journey over this hour on this.
100%. It was fun. And I hopefully some, you know, people enjoy the conversation. Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you in March, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Michael. All right, everybody. And that's it for this live show. I appreciate you guys watching. A couple of things I just wanted to mention real quick. If you haven't checked it out, the book Selling with Authentic Persuasion is out in hard copy, Kindle, and I'm super excited to announce. A week ago, it came out on Audible, finally got approved. So it's out. Check it out. If you want to listen to the book, if you're more of an audio person than reading, check that out. You can find that on Amazon, which is great. Also, I'm spending a lot of time on Clubhouse and doing some stuff there, putting out some content. So if you're on Clubhouse, come find me at Jason Cutter, which is super cool. That's why I want to jump on there, get that name, make it easy as possible. So find me on there doing some stuff about authentic persuasion, introversion, marketing, you know, all kinds of various stuff, which is super fun. And then if you want to chat, if you want to talk about sales, business, if you want help with your sales team, or you just want to find out if there's anything I can do to help and coach you, then go to Vox with Jason, which is the, it's a app, a free app that you can use. And I use that to chat with people real time, going back and forth, coaching, consulting, anything I can do. So.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.